So I would like to first thank Peng and Louis for their invitation. It's my first time to visit PI. I'm very glad to be here. So to be in the time room. Today I will talk about some of our recent works on this twisted defects, so the synthetic non-abelian anions, which means you want to get some non-abelian anions out of the abelian system by twisting the system. So that's why we call it synthetic. And this work is in collaboration with Mason Bakashli and Chaoming Jian. Mason is our Simon's postdoc at Stanford, and Chaoming is my student. Mason was actually Xiaogang's student, so he did most of this work. So this is an outline. So I will briefly review the topological states and fractional chain insulators, which are where we realize these systems. So fractional chain insulators just means some quantum Hall states realized on the lattice models without an orbital magnetic field. I'm not sure whether any of you really need a interaction. Probably you are all familiar with the topological states, but yeah, I will start from the beginning. So then I will talk about this some special way I proposed to understand these quantum Hall states, which are is this better? This looks better. So which are using 1-year states representation, and so because that tells us help us to understand what happened in this higher Chern number systems. So that's the key difference from the ordinary Landau level problem, that we can have an arbitrary Chern number for each band. And then in that system, we found these new states, which are called topological pneumatic states. And in these states, there are these non-abelian genons, which are some defects with non-abelian statistics. And I will discuss some properties like non-abelian statistics and the quantum dimensions of the genons, and also some topological field theory description and the relation to other topological defects studied in other systems. Somehow this thing is shaking. Do you see that this thing is oscillating up and down? Okay. So, we start from the integer and the fractional quantum Hall effects, which is always the starting point for topological states. So the quantum Hall, the integer quantum Hall is very simple. It's a Landau level problem when you have an integer field, the Landau levels. So electrons go in circles and they occupy all the orbitals. So the bulk is incompressible, but it's possible for electrons to go around the edge. So the bulk is insulating, so electron cannot go through the bulk. But electron can go around the edge chirally. And that's described by a bulk topological invariant, which describes how many edge states are there. So that's given by this momentum space Chern number proposed by Zolis and collaborators. So this Chern number is defined in momentum space, which means you take a momentum, you take a Brillouin zone. In this case, with magnetic field, you have the magnetic Brillouin zone. And then, for each momentum, there is a wave function, which is the wave function of this state. And then you change the momentum and consider that as a parameter. Then there is an adiabatic transport. There is a Berry phase, which corresponds to a gauge curvature in the momentum space. And then in any compact manifold, this gauge curvature must integrate over, must give you a constant, which is the Chern number. So that's a mathematical fact that the total flux out of a surface must be quantized, which is a number of monopole inside. So that's this Chern number. So we will use that concept later. So. And then we know there are these fractional quantum Hall states which come from interaction. Basically, when you have interaction, electrons effectively occupy a larger area than the integer quantum Hall. That's the simplest picture I can come up with. Basically, you have a partially filled Landau level, but the electrons move in a larger area because they repulse each other, and then they form some fractionalized state. So and then the quantum Hall. Well, you can already see it from this Zolis, this TKNN formula, that it doesn't necessarily require a magnetic field. The integer quantum Hall just requires some Berry curvature momentum space gauge field. And you can cook up some other model which has that property. So the first example is given by Haldane in 1988. that he defined this honeycomb lattice model, where it's just two band model. So you have two bands, and then you look at if you look at the suddenly it start to oscillate. I don't know if that's because I step on something. So maybe just some quantum fluctuation. That's fine. So this occupied band has a natural chain number because it's like there is a hedgehog in the momentum space given by this effective magnetic field in the momentum space. And then as a consequence of that, you see these edge states. If you put this system on a cylinder, then you see edge states at the edge of the cylinder, which you can do numerics and show that there are edge states crossing the band gap. So basically, in the cylinder, you have a ky, which is still a good quantum number, the momentum in the y direction. But the momentum in the x direction is not a good quantum number anymore. So you can plot the 1D structure, 1D edge, 1D band structure. You see that there are these chiral edge states. So there is a state moving up on the left edge, a state moving down to the right edge. And I would like to briefly mention that there are material proposals now to realize these kind of states, which gives you a quantum Hall without orbital magnetic field. Of course, you still need to break time reversal, so it's something like a ferromagnetic insulator. And then this material candidate we proposed in 2008 is a mercury telluride doped with manganese. And that is close to be experimentally realized. So you can actually have a quantum Hall system without an orbital magnetic field. And there is also another proposal by Shou Cheng's group. So, and then today I will mainly talk about the fractionalized generalization of this effect. So we have fractional quantum Hall in the Landau level problem, and we know the integer quantum Hall is generalized to the lattice system. So naturally, we can ask whether fractional quantum Hall can also be generalized. So interestingly, although this seems to be a natural question, this has been investigated only very recently. So there are several works in 2011, including a work from Xiaogang and Evelyn here. So there are three works from Claudia Shamu and Dao and Sankada Sama, Kaisun, Zheng Chenggu. So then these works have shown that numerically that you have evidence that if you partially fill a band with a chain number, just like this kind of band, but if you partially fill it and ignore the kinetic energy, which means if you consider a flat band, there is no kinetic energy difference between different states, then interaction has a non-trivial effect and can really give you something like a fractional quantum Hall state. So there are various numerical evidences like from entanglement spectrum and so on, which tells you really these things looks like a Laughlin state. So then, and there are also analytic results by looking at density algebras. So then it's interesting to ask, how do I understand these states? Naively, before seeing all these works, I would naively expect it's very hard to get a topological state. I would say on the lattice, I don't have any nice symmetry like the Landau level. Why don't I just get some CDW or something when I turn on interaction? But somehow they indeed you get these topological states. And one way I try to understand it is to go back to the experience in quantum Hall where many things are understood based on wave functions. So Laughlin wave function is the way quantum Hall was first understood, at least in the simple cases. In almost every state, we can just understand this fractional quantum Hall state by writing down a wave function. And that's because this wave function is convenient in the Landau level case because all the holomorphic functions times this Gaussian factor are legitimate wave functions. So you can just choose from them. And we know a lot about holomorphic functions. We know many ways to generate them. So these are convenient, but for these lattice systems, we don't have anything like a holomorphic function. So the question is, how do we generalize this story? How do we write down wave functions on the lattice system? So this turns out to be possible by using the one-year functions. So one-year function is a special basis, which is completely single particle. It's a one-particle basis. But when you choose this basis, the physics becomes more transparent, and you can make a better mapping to the quantum Hall system and understand the wave function better. So basically, you can so these 1D, 1D functions are defined by we first look at the cylinder that we shown before. So you look at the cylinder geometry, and this is a free fermion problem. Then we can take the ky. So for each fixed ky, this is a 1D problem, right? So you get a direct product of several 1D problems with different ky eigenvalues. So the wave functions with a fixed ky is a 1D system. So for each 1D system like this, I can define a 1-year function, which is just Fourier transform of the Bloch functions. So the Bloch states in this band, I can just take a Fourier transform to get 1-year functions, which are what people use a lot in like quantum chemistry. So you just get some like orthogonalized version of the atomic orbitals. They are local and they are orthogonal to each other. And in general, this like if you want to do this in 2D, in general, it's not possible if you have a chain number, because you cannot find a local basis. But in 1D, there is no obstruction. We can always do it. But there is always an ambiguity here, which is that the Hamiltonian determines the Bloch state, but there is an overall phase which is not determined. So you choose different overall phase, you get a different 1-year function. And okay, so this phase ambiguity can be fixed by having some requirements. So the requirement that people usually use when they use the 1-year function is they make the 1-year function maximally localized, which means you choose this phase, because this phase is in k-space, so if it's not very smooth, then in real space, the 1-year function is wider. So you can make a choice where the 1-year function is most localized. And that is called the maximally localized 1-year function. So in 1D, there is a nice way to do it, to do this maximal localization. You can just define a position operator and project it to the occupied band. And then you diagonalize that, you will get automatically the maximal localized 1-year functions. So, and then there is the key property we will use in the construction of this fractional quantum Hall wave functions is this position of the 1-year function. So the 1-year function has a center mass position, which is like I define the X operator, which is just single particle operator that has number 1, 2, 3 on the different sides. And then you ask where is this center mass position, which is the average value of X of this 1-year function. But the X is like a derivative over K, right? So when you take this average value, it has something to do with the momentum space gauge field. So basically, because this central mass position, because 1-year functions are related by translation symmetry, so each 1-year state has the same shift away from this integer lattice site. Say every of them is a shift theta over 2 pi actually away from the lattice site. So with this n, yeah. So we take a lattice side to be integer, so k is running from 0 to 2 pi. Momentum is 0 to 2 pi. So lattice constant, yeah. So that's just a Fourier transform going to the position space. And then, so the 1-year functions will be localized around the site n, but there is a shift, which is theta over 2 pi. And then, the interesting thing is that this shift has a very nice geometrical meaning, which is the flux of this k-space gauge field for that given ky. So far we have been talking about the 1D system defined by fixed ky. So everything is for the fixed, the same ky. So for fixed ky, then you have a gauge field in the k-space. So this is a k-space torus, so we have kx, ky. And when you fix ky, you are on the circle. And then you have this gauge field on this this little circle. Now the gauge field on that circle, which has a flux, right? So that flux is just the integral of the flux is just the integral of the gauge field. Sorry, I thought I have a equation. Yeah, it's there. So the flux is just the integral of the gauge field, and that actually determines this shift. It's the eigen states of ky. So you just take all the, this is only for the free fermion system, but you can take different KY states don't talk to each other. So you take the subspace of the 2D system with all fixed the same KY. Then that's like a 1D system. Yeah, I mean, you just need a translation symmetry. That's the only thing you require. So you need a translation symmetry in both directions. And then you get these 1-year states that are translation, that are moving in 1D. Right? Okay, so the key property here is that the 1-year state, the 1-year functions are localized. They are supposed to be around for a topological trivial band. For a trivial band, the 1-year function are supposed to be around the one atom, something like around the one atom. But when you have this case-based gauge field, this 1-year function is something in between the two atoms. So it's moved away, and the amount is moved away is that flux, which is like the flux in this little circle. And then the chain number comes in because when you move this circle around this KY direction. So for each KY, I define the polarization, and when I move it along the KY direction, then this flux changes, and the amount of change is exactly determined by the flux going out of the torus, right? Because you have the flux, and when you move around it, why can't the flux change? Because some flux is going into the torus or going out, so that determines the change. So actually, this theta as a function of KY, this derivative, is determined by this flux going out of the torus here. So when you integrate it from 0 to 2 pi, you actually get not 0, but you get a chain number times 2 pi. So basically, this has a very simple physical interpretation, which is that when you change ky from 0 to 2 pi, these 1-year states move in space, but they don't go back to their own position when ky goes from 0 to 2 pi. They go to the next state. They go to the next lattice side if the chain number is 1. If the chain number is n, it skips, it goes to the n size. Moved by n size. So this is not surprised. This is not surprising because it's basically like a Laughlin pumping argument, right? Like why do I have a Hall conductance of the system? Because when you apply electric field in the y direction, you are accelerating the electrons in the y direction, so all the kys are increasing. And when the ky increase, this tells me that all the 1-year states are moving in the x direction. So that's exactly what gives me the Hall conductance. So yeah, when you are moving ky, then x shifts. And then this property is very important in this sense that when I change ky from 0 to 2 pi, I don't go back to the same 1-year function, but I go to the next one. Let's talk about chain number 1 case. Then because I go to the next one, I can just keep going. I can keep increasing ky, then it will go to the first site, it will go to the second site and third site, and run over the whole system. So in other words, usually in a 2D system, I have to characterize the system by 2D momentum, by momentum in two directions or position in two directions. But because of this special twist boundary condition of the 1-year function in the KY direction, then this all the 1-year states in the system actually are labeled by one number, by one dimensional number, which is this big K. You just unwrap this this thing, this helix, and you get this one line, which tells you that. So I can just define something, which is define some big K, and the physical meaning of that big K is that the modulo 2 pi part of it is just ky, but the 2 pi times the integer part it tells you the position of it in the x direction. So that's exactly like in the Landau level case where. Because I have a continuous system, so I have a continuous momentum. And for each momentum ky, I have a Gaussian in the x direction. And the position of the Gaussian is determined by the ky, right? So I have a k determine the x position, so it's something like that. And then when I increase k, it moves in the x direction. So you see now by doing this mapping, I have a natural basis to map between the quantum Hall system and the lattice system. I just need to find this hidden 1D variable K and identify that with the real physical momentum in the quantum Hall case. So the statement is that as long as you have chain number 1, then even if you don't have this continuous translation symmetry in Y direction, you can still define something correspond to the KY in the quantum Hall case. And both system is labeled by 1D label. And once I identify this mapping, then I map the whole Hilbert space between the two systems. So the quantum Hall Hilbert space is expanded by this basis in the Landau gauge. I choose the Landau gauge, so I get these wave functions, which are local in one direction. So and then this mapping maps the single particle state, so it also maps the, between the many-body states. So I, it maps any many-body state here to here. There's a one-to-one mapping. So then of course this already tells me that I can map any quantum Hall wave function, like a Laughlin wave function, to the lattice system.
In the lattice case, is it also Gaussian localized?
That's a very good question. So they are actually not Gaussian localized, they are exponential localized. Yeah. And I will talk about the locality thing in, I don't have that here. But so there's a, here. So the one important property is I need to check that this mapping is local. I mean, this basis is not local. This basis is local in one direction, and in the other direction is a plane wave. So I can say, okay, I can map my Laughlin wave functions or any other wave function to the lattice system, but is that really a ground state of some local Hamiltonian? And the answer is yes. And the way we show that is you can map, okay, we know for Laughlin state there is a pseudo potential Hamiltonian, for which is the Laughlin wave function is the exact ground state. And then you can do the same mapping to the Hamiltonian. You map the Hamiltonian because you have a mapping of full Hilbert space. So of course you can map the Hamiltonian. You just take the Hamiltonian in this lattice Hilbert space, which has the same matrix element between the one-year functions as the pseudo-potential Hamiltonian between the Landau level states. So, and then when you map it here, you see that by using the not the 1 year by transform everything into the coherence state basis rather than the 1 year basis, you can see that this lattice Hamiltonian is indeed a local in 2D, but it's local in the exponential sense. So you get some terms, some interaction terms in a range, in a finite range, but it decays exponentially. There is no sharp cutoff; it decays exponentially. So actually, I think this exponential versus Gaussian difference is really the key difference between the lattice system and the quantum Hall system. It comes from the Barry curvature, comes from the fact that the Barry curvature in K space is not uniform. So formally we define this mapping from the quantum Hall state to the lattice system. But it's still a very difficult question, very complicated problem, because the many-body wave functions are very are defined on an exponentially large degree of dimensional Hilbert space. So it may be very difficult to do anything. But fortunately, there are many wave functions in quantum Hall case that we know how to expand in these spaces. We know that you expand them in this occupation number basis, and then they look like something like a CDW plus a lot of fluctuations around CDW, which restore the translation symmetry. So these weight are known. For example, for Laughlin state, there is this Rizai-Haldane's work which does that. And there are many generalizations, using Jeff polynomials by Bernabeu and Haldane. And so Xiaogang and Zheng Han Wang has this pattern of zeros, which also is other ways to generate new wave functions. And if I understand correctly, that also give me some partition structure.
I think pattern zero is a little more general. The tech polynomial can give rise to many wave functions, but however, they have, the most of them are spoken non-unitary, actually scattered.
Okay.
So the unitary one coincides with the power function.
With a pair of
which is a color really
redesign. Oh, the
The pattern zero can give rise to more general wave function beyond the pair.
Do I know this kind of representation in the pattern of zero case?
It's still not clear why Jack polynomial gave rise to all the pair of fermion, but the actual ones all non-unitary.
I see.
But indeed, there are actual non-abelian quantum Hall states beyond the power fermion. given by some pattern zero, but somehow they are not Jack polynomial.
I see.
But still, pattern zero is this pattern is a works for every case.
Uh-huh.
But Jack polynomial only describes a subset of a pattern. It's paraphrasing past a lot of non-unitary one. But I don't understand why.
I don't know, but the maybe actually practically when we really want to say I want to write down this wave function on a finite size system and then I mean if I write down this wave function then I know how to write down the corresponding lattice wave function.
Yeah.
In that case, I think the most economic way is actually find the pseudo potential Hamiltonian.
Yeah,
and then diagonalize.
That's basically pattern zero.
So pattern zero gives me the Hamiltonian.
It's a pattern.
So that's
basically.
That should be more useful for this kind of application. So we basically in this paper that Qinghua Li and Ronnie Tomlio collaborated with me. So we showed that how do you map all these pseudo potential Hamiltonians to the lattice,
yeah, okay.
And then you use that to as a basis to expand this Hamiltonian. So I have a lattice Hamiltonian. I can always map it to this basis and then expand it into pseudo potentials. Just like what we did for Kalman Hall with the Coulomb inversion, you expand the pseudo potentials and you see, okay, the first one dominant, so you get the one third.
So maybe let me comment is that there's a two body pseudo potential. Actually, there's also three body
pseudo potential,
four body pseudo potential,
yeah.
And etc.
Yeah.
So pattern zero basically is describing this two body, three body, four body pseudo potential, and using this, try to pin down the wave function. Actually, no more than that, just that.
So here, actually, in this paper, we also discussed the generalization of the multi-body, the more than two-body pseudo potentials to the lattice.
Yeah.
And it's tricky because
if you only have a two-body pseudo potential, there are some difficult to produce, say, like
non-abelian states. Yeah.
But the three-body pseudo potential can produce a Farthing state exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so interestingly, so although we don't have anything like angular momentum conservation or anything, so on the lattice, we can still define all these pseudo potentials, including the multi-body one, basically because you can still look at this 1D basis and they just correspond to some Hopping terms, yeah, pair Hopping terms. And one interesting thing is that in recent, very recently, there are these two works by Andrew Bernoulli's group and Shafili and Moeller, which shows that this wave function I proposed, this kind of lattice counterpart of the Laplace wave function, this wave function actually agrees quite well with the exact generalization. So, like for Laplace 1/2 state, they get 80% overlap between the exact ground state and this wave function predicted by Wigner function. And then for the 1/3 case, it's even better, 99%. But there's some important gauge choice that need to be made. So, which means you don't take the maximal localized one-year function, but modify it. That there is this phase ambiguity you need to choose.
So what's the interaction? Just nearest neighbor basically?
Yeah, and like in this different models, there are some different interactions, but basically nearest neighbor. You take the simplest term, nearest neighbor interaction. Yeah. So. Okay, so the one of the most interesting direction in this field is of course we want to find some new states that are absent in quantum Hall, and that's the main thing I will talk about. Yeah. So the question is okay, we show that for chain number one we can map everything on the quantum Hall to the lattice, and this mapping is local, so basically all the physics in quantum Hall can be realized here, and then the mapping is two-way, so you won't expect to have new things. But then for a chain number higher than one, it's different. Because the Landau levels is completely fixed by the magnetic transition symmetry. Every Landau level has chain number one, which means which is why in the quantum Hall system, there is no matter how complicated quantum Hall state you have, it's always the Hall conductance is always the same as the feeding fraction. Because the electrons just move in the same way when you apply electric field. So, but here, lattice system, there is no correlation between filling and number, between filling and the Hall conductance, because for the same filling, for the same band, I can have any chain number I want. And then, for chain number higher than one, then there is some new physics coming, which we can see in this this 1-year mapping. So the 1-year function looks like this when I have chain number 2. Basically, when you change ky from 0 to 2 pi, then the 1-year function shifts by 2 lattice size, because it basically moves twice faster, twice as fast as the chain number 1 case. So you see that the set 0 1-year function goes to set 2 rather than set 1, and then keep going. So that means that when I try to unwrap this and label it by 1D momentum, I have to do it separately for the even and odd sides because they don't talk to each other. So I get two families of 1D states rather than one family. And each family, the red one is formed by even sides and the blue one is the odd side. Each of them is the same, topologically the same as the Landau level. That's also no surprise because the Landau level has chain number 1. So if you deform this chain number 2 band into into Landau level, it must be two of them. But the interesting thing is that this is the way you decompose it. So the way you decompose it into two Landau levels is that these two Landau levels are not independent to each other. They are related by translation symmetry, because one of them is formed by even size, the other is formed by odd size. So it's like straps, like two ground states of CDW. So when you do translation when you do a translation in the x direction, they are exchanged. So that means, okay, this mapping maps every chain number 2 state to a bilayer quantum Hall state. But there is an additional symmetry in the bilayer quantum Hall state, which is the exchange of the two layers. So when you take a translation in the x direction on the lattice, it transforms into a exchange between two layers in the Landau level problem. So, and the y direction translation doesn't do that. So, and what does that mean? So if you think about the simplest state on the bilayer case, the Hopperian state, which is an abelian state. And if you think about that state, then so it has some intra layer. So within each layer, there is some repulsion. There's some distance between particles. So there is an M, and then there is an interlayer coupling labeled by L. So if M is not equal to N, then there is no symmetry between the two layers. So that means my lattice system breaks translation symmetry. But the more interesting thing is when M equal to N, then the lattice symmetry, translation symmetry is preserved. So when I translate in the x direction, the two layers are exchanged and the symmetry is preserved. But it's preserved in a very natural way, which means you have to exchange the two layers when you translate. And that has a very interesting consequence when we have dislocation. So that's what we will discuss in the following. So we name this state as topological pneumatic state because it's it apparently transforms differently when you take translation in x and y direction. And from the dislocation, you can see explicitly that this rotation symmetry must be broken because the translation in x direction, there are dislocations which behave very differently when you consider x and y dislocation. So basically, you have to break rotation symmetry. Yeah.
Before you go to, you mentioned about this bilayer analogy and the wave function being in two sublattices. If you take graphene, there, even though you don't have a flat band, if you look at the Landau levels near the Dirac cone, they also have these two sublattice structures.
Yes.
One of the set of Landau levels, it has a support only in one sublattice.
Yes.
Does that, and then interactions mixes them and so on.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Actually, something similar can happen there. The problem is these two sublattices in graphene are not related by translation. So if you consider a defect which exchanges the two, that can also have all the properties that stay here.
In fact, there you have a five-member tree.
A what?
Yeah, five-member tree as a topological defect.
Yeah.
These two things get connected.
Exactly. So that's a conical singularity. Mm. That's a disclination. Because if you have a five-member ring and everywhere else looks like a honeycomb lattice, then it's a cone. Right? It's like a, it's something like this.
Correct.
So if you have that, indeed, yeah, indeed, the same thing like this will happen. That's another possible way to realize that. We are studying that also. But it's kind of, I don't know how easy is it to realize this kind of thing. Yeah.
This half mover, this kind of thing with a half mover.
Yeah, because.
This half mover.
Yeah.
So maybe this is a stupid question. So distinguish distinction between x and y direction because you have the square line, right? So a gauge choice can change x to y or y to x.
So basically, I use the one-year function, which are localized in x direction, to construct this state. And if I want to get it, I can use the other kind of one-year function, which localized in y direction, to construct some similar state. But that state will be sensitive to the y dislocation. So basically,
so you have a triangular lattice, it will presumably be different points, right?
Yeah, it will be different. I mean, basically, if we care about the lattice rotation symmetry, then this rotation, what I'm saying is that the lattice rotation symmetry, I mean, if you start from a Hamiltonian with the lattice rotation symmetry, then it must be spontaneously broken in this state. That's why we call it a nematic state, because it doesn't break translation, but break rotation. So, but if you start from something without any rotation, then that's fine. We don't need to spontaneously break any symmetry. So this property still remains. The interesting property here is only related to translation symmetry, so it's still fine. Yeah. So then, okay, here the advantage compared to the graphene case is we don't need the conical singularity. We need dislocation. Dislocation can occur in a flat system. So when you go around the lattice, the dislocation means that when you go around the lattice, say by the same steps up, left, down, right, then you don't go back to yourself. You go to a site that's translated. So as a consequence of that, then if you start from an even site, go around it adiabatically, you actually go back to the outside. So that has a very non-trivial consequence here, because we have shown that the even and odd sides, which are these two layers. So when you go around, and basically, so when you go around the closed loop on the lattice, you actually experience a translation by one in the x direction, which takes you from one layer to the other layer. So that tells me that this dislocation actually behaves like a wormhole on the lattice. Why is a wormhole? Because I have these two layers, and originally they don't talk to each other. But when you have dislocation, then when you go around, you go to the other layer. So there is a way to go to the other layer. Right? So topologically, it has changed. I mean, say, if you imagine each layer is a torus with periodic boundary condition, then now the system is not just two decoupled torus anymore. It's something that's connected to each other. Right?
It's like a branch cut.
Yeah, exactly. So this is the picture that it's like a branch cut. So when you go around the defect, you go to the other layer, and then you go around twice, you go back. So you're effectively, you don't have this bilayer quantum Hall anymore, but you have something like a single layer quantum Hall on a heterogeneous surface, on a Riemann surface. And this branch cut is the way to describe the Riemann surfaces. Right. So, okay, and then I should mention that this is quite related to this previous work of Mason and Xiaogang about this orbifolding transaminant series, U1 cross U1, where each U1 is like on each layer, and then when you twist, you introduce the orbifolding, which means you allow this kind of twist defects. But there is a key difference, which is here we have a global Z2 symmetry rather than a gauged Z2 symmetry. So it's not described by any transaminant theory or any topological field theory, because these points are not topological quasi-particles. They are global defects. They have a log interaction between them, like vertices in a zero fluid. And that actually changes the properties of the system. So also this similar thing happens for dislocation in other systems, like the Z2 gauge theory and ZN gauge theory. This is studied first by Hector Bombian here, and also generalized to the ZN case by Xiaogang and Yizhong. So it's quite similar to this case, that the translations act naturally to that system. But of course, that's not for a generic ZN gauge theory, but some special model of ZN gauge theory. And then you can have a similar effect. I will discuss later about the relation between these different defects. Okay, so the best way to understand this geometry, this branch cut geometry, is this picture. So I learned from Mason that you flip the top layer, you get a wormhole. So you flip the top layer. So I labeled AB here to show that this is the flip, that you flip the top layer like that and keep the bottom layer the same. And then you see that originally you are going from here to here. Now after the flip, you are going from here to here. Right? So it's a wormhole. So this nice, very intuitively tells you what happened when you introduce the dislocations. So you, everywhere when you introduce two dislocations, then you get a wormhole. And then you introduce two more, you get another wormhole. So this everything becomes very simple, because you can ask, okay, why is that interesting? Because this system we are considering is topological. For example, we can consider the MM0 state, which is simply that the two layers are decoupled and each layer is a Laughlin state 1 over M. And then now I introduce the defects, and then there's wormholes between them. So I just get a single Laughlin state on this heterogeneous surface. And then we know that the Laughlin state on heterogeneous surface will have a ground state degeneracy, topological degeneracy, which is M to the power of genus. And here, you see, if I add one handle, I add one wormhole, I don't change the genus. But if I add the second one, there's a genus. And then you add the third one, you add one genus. So basically, when you have n pairs of defects, you get a n minus one genus. So there are n minus one handles. So the ground state degeneracy is m to the n minus one. And that means that on average, the degree of freedom of each dislocation is square root m. Because when you add a pair of them, you add m states. So this immediately tells you there's something non-trivial happening. Because you start from an abelian state where there is nothing with a non-trivial quantum dimension. So there is no degeneracy. But now, I mean, there is no degeneracy on a sphere. But now you introduce these defects, and the defects have some hidden degree of freedom in it. And this degree of freedom is not local, because it's square root m per defect. So it's hidden between two defects. And it actually doesn't matter which two you pair them up. This dashed line doesn't really exist, because these are really point-like defects. So we know, so that means that these defects become non-abelian anions. They have a non-trivial dimension, and then we can naturally ask what happened when we move them around. Do they have a non-trivial braiding? And then they do have a non-trivial braiding, and there is a very nice way to see that on this picture. Which is basically, if you remember this flip I did, so I flipped this defect to get from a branch cut to the wormhole. And then after the flip, so before the flip, then now if I'm breeding the two defects, say in the left picture, I have these two defects and I'm breeding them. And then after the flip, what happened is, because you flip the top layer, so you are actually rotating the top and bottom to the opposite direction. Because before the flip, you are actually just twisting the whole thing. So after the flip, you are actually rotating this top and bottom to the opposite direction, which gives you this thing called a dent twist, that takes the torus back to itself, but it basically cut the torus and turn the top half by pi. And turn the bottom half in the other direction by pi, and then glue them back. So to see that more explicitly, you can just check what happened to this large loop, to this loop. I call it a large loop because when you map it to heterogeneous surface, this is a loop which surrounds the hole. I mean, to knowing the mapping, you can just map some loop. So this is not contractible. This is non-contractible loop. And then this loop, what happened after I braid the left two defects? You see that this loop will become this loop, right? So it gets around like that. And then if you map that loop to here, you see that you get a loop which surrounds both holes of the torus. It's not only surrounds this hole, but it surrounds the other non-contractible loop of the torus. So that's exactly what this dentist does. It cut in the middle and then twist, you get that. So that tells us basically everything about this genons. Because when you breed these two genons, you know that you are doing this dent twist on this single layer theory. And once you know that, then you know what it does to the Hilbert space. Because for the single layer theory, which is like Laughlin state, for the single layer theory, this is a modular transformation on the torus that we know, that contains basically all the information about that single layer theory. So this is mathematically, this is what is shown by this mapping here. That means that for any given system with these branch cuts, I have a braid group where I braid these branch cuts. And then this mapping determines a way to map this braiding of the branch cuts to a mapping class group of the heterogeneous surface, which means some way to twist the Hedgehog series back to itself, but it's a non-trivial way to, it's a non-contractible, it's a non-trivial way to do it. And then for each of such operations, for a given theory on this genus, on this Hedgehog series, like a Laplace state, for each of this theory that defines a representation, a projective representation of this mapping class group. So because I have this mapping, then that means I define a mapping, I define a representation of the braid group.
Projective one. Or
projective, yeah. So for each operation in the braid group, I define some operation on the Hilbert space, which is a projective representation.
But it has to be projective, or can you make them non-projective?
I can't talk about it that here because the defects are global. So when I move them around, they have a large interaction. So
but the formal. Suddenly,
overall phase, I don't know.
But
yeah.
However, whether you can just pick overall
yeah,
phase,
I see what you
make
mean.
It a representation.
At least not, I mean, if because this thing is already projective.
Yeah.
So at least when this is projective, that is, will be projective. Okay. Because, I mean, the way to see this is projective is I can do this like ST, and then I do it six times, and then I get an identity,
so
but up to a phase.
Different from this ZM model. ZM model probably this one can be non-projective. Then you
yeah.
Faithful. So therefore the one
yeah.
Coming from the quantum Hall states are fundamentally projective. There's no way to remove that.
Because the chiral central
yeah.
Charge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's maybe something
right.
Like that.
Yeah, I wonder what is the physical consequence.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know how, because you cannot detect this global phase, so I don't know how to detect it. But in principle, yeah, there is this this central charge which appears in the projective representation of this.
Yeah.
So basically, like on a torus, if you do some operations, like you do some modular transformations six times, then you should go back to yourself. But in the Hilbert space, you don't, you get a phase, and that phase is the central charge over six. Okay. So for special central charge, it may be faithful. And okay, so we got the braid we got the quantum dimension and we got the braid statistics. So there is a very interesting example that shows that we already get something very non-trivial. So if you consider 2 to 0, which is the simplest possibility we can think of, so you have a 1/2 Laplace state, which is a bosonic state, 1/2 Laplace state on each layer. Then okay, then there are two ground states per genus. So for each genus, there are two ground states. So the quantum dimension of each defect is square root of 2. So that's the same as the Marana zero mode that we talked about in the icing theory or in the topological superconductors. So you may wonder, okay, whether the braiding is the same. So you use this way to calculate the braiding by looking at the modular transformations of the Laplace state on the Hedgehog surface. So it's actually exactly the same up to this overall phase, which we cannot define in the system because of the long-range interaction. So it's actually exactly this Marana braiding. So it tells us that you can indeed use this way to generate non-abelian theories such as Ising theory from, well, it's not exactly an Ising theory, it's a projectively defined. We can indeed generate these things from the abelian space. And moreover, you can generate many more theories because you can use MM0 rather than 220. So you can have many other ways to get generalizations of Marana fermions, get this non-abelian anions with square root of m rather than square root of 2 quantum dimension. Okay, so one important thing I should say is that we need another way to calculate all these things, to calculate the quantum dimension and this grading. Because for MM0, I just have two decoupled layers, so I can think about flipping the top layer and these things. But if it's MML state, if L is non-zero in the Hopperian state, there is a coupling between the two layers. So I cannot really flip the top and think, I cannot think of the two layers as decoupled. So in that case, I cannot just think geometrically and map this branch cut to a wormhole and do this kind of thing. So if I don't flip, how can I figure out the ground state degeneracy and braiding? So how can I figure out these properties? And there is a way to do that by going to the edge theory. So we don't do any flip now. This is some two-layer theory, and the two layers may be coupled. And in more general case, maybe we are not, I mean, we may be considering other symmetries. So in general, the advantage, so the reason why we can go to the edge state is that you can put all these defects along one line, because you only care about the topological properties of them. You just put them all along this one circle. And then you cut the system there. So after you cut the system, you don't see the defect, of course, because dislocation means when you go around there, you see a shift. But if you cut there, then nothing tells you there is a dislocation. So after you cut, you just get a cylinder, ordinary cylinder with the open boundary condition. And now, like for Hopkins state, we know the edge state. The edge theory is the Carroll-Lattinger liquid with a K metric. So, and then what happened is, okay, I want to go back to this gapped state in 2D. So what I do is I cut and glue. So I cut the system into this open boundaries, into the cylinder, which has this gapless edge state. And then I glue them back, which means I turn on this relevant couplings. The backscattering is in the edge theory, the inter-edge tunneling, to take me back to this system. And then I know exactly what happens when you have the twist defect. Because basically what the twist defect does is in this regions between the cut, between the branch cut, you have ordinary inter-edge tunneling, which is within each layer. Electron tunnels within this first layer and the second layer. And then between the two branch cuts, you exchange the two layers, right? So you introduce the coupling that's twisted. You include the red-blue coupling. So locally, there is no effect because you don't know what is the labeling of the two layers. But then when you compare these two, then you know there is a defect in between. So you see that in this way, this 2D problem of the topological state reduced to a conventional 1D Lattinger liquid problem. So first of all, if you consider a system with no defect and then turn on the inter-edge coupling, you get the torus degeneracy. And the way you get torus degeneracy is that you can only introduce electron tunneling between the layers. You cannot tunnel quasi-particles because you physically cut then glue, there is only electron tunneling. So you introduce electron tunneling, and because electron is like M particles, let's say, forget about the alpha well, electron is like M quasi-particles. So when I introduce the tunneling between them in the Lattinger liquid language, it's like a cosine M phi kind of mass term. And that mass term basically so when the mass term is large enough, it always opens a gap and bring you to one of the minima of the cosine M phi. But there are M minima. So you pick one of the minima, which corresponds to that you pick one of the ground topological ground states. So basically, in this way, the topological degeneracy in the 2D system is mapped to a conventional long-range order in the 1D Lattinger liquid. And then now you introduce these defects, then it's just you have the electron operators in the first layer and the second layer. Oh, this is two. In the first layer and second layer, and then you introduce this coupling, like C1 dagger C1, C2 dagger C2 here, and C1 dagger C2, C2 dagger C1 here. And then you ask, okay, how many degenerate ground states are there? So you just need to count the minima of the cosine term, right? But the only natural thing is when you count the minima of the cosine term, you need to know which commutes with which. Because this tunneling here, if you look at, I mean, of course, the electron tunneling term should commute with each other. They are physical. But the minima of that term, the cosine m phi here and cosine m phi here, you call it cosine m phi prime. There, they commute with each other. But when you pick a value of phi, you pick a value of this minima here, it doesn't commute with the minima there. So when you count, when you take into account that, then you can get a correct counting of the ground state degeneracy, which means basically, what happened is it decomposed into two sectors, which is symmetric sector and anti-symmetric sector. And then the symmetric sector, which is a symmetric combination of the two layers, just doesn't see anything when you go across the branch cut because you exchange the two layers, and for symmetric sector, it's doing nothing. So symmetric sector remains the same as before, and that gives you M plus L. And then the anti-symmetric sector see a change when you go across the defect, and that means for the anti-symmetric sector, you only need to count degeneracy in these regions because this region doesn't commute with it. So when you fix the value here, you fix the minima here, you automatically in some zero position of different minima here. So that doesn't give you additional degeneracy. So basically, finally, what you get is this result, which is M plus L in the M plus L from the symmetric sector, which is just torus degeneracy, and M minus L to power N, which comes from the N pairs of defects. So that tells me that the quantum dimension is actually just square root of M minus L, which is which tells me that basically the symmetrical combination M plus L doesn't do anything. And the anti-symmetric combination M minus L plays the role of M. You just think of them as a decoupled layer. And then there is some alternative. So OK, we want to talk about braiding also in this 1D picture. And it's a little bit tricky to talk braiding in 1D. But we know people talk about that when they think about this, like Majorana wires in the superconductor. So you can make a Y junction of three wires and move the things around. So so we can repeat this kind of story here. So I think I'm running out of time. So I will just briefly mention. So the one important information here is that what is the zero mode operator? I mean, this is related to the people's interest in the topological superconductors. So in the Majorana fermion case, so you already talk about Majorana zero mode, which is some operator that acts on this this defect. And the algebra of this zero mode tells you that there is the square root of 2 degeneracy in locally. So here, actually, we can find the corresponding zero mode operator, which is some quadriparticle tunneling process. So you take a quadriparticle from one layer, and then you go around the defect once. So you don't go back to yourself. You go to the other layer, right? So if you define a unitary operator which does this, it takes this quadriparticle, goes here. This is a zero mode operator, which means it doesn't change any energy. So it commutes with Hamiltonian. And of course, this is not a gauge environment. So it's not really a physical operator. But any you can combine this operator you can compare pairs of these operators, which is gauge environment. Like you can take this quadriparticle here, and then you combine it with the other process, which takes it back around the other defect. So you see that these two processes together gives you this non-trivial loop, which is the loop around the two dislocations, which measures the charge, topological charge in that non-trivial loop. Yeah, so basically then you can figure out the braiding by looking at what happened when I braided two defects, what happened to the zero mode operators. So if you braid clockwisely, then the zero mode around the first defect becomes the zero mode around the second defect. But the zero mode around second defect will become something like this, which is actually a zero mode around the second defect times the figure eight thing. And that figure eight is this topological charge in that loop. So you can actually determine these two equations. And the relation to the braiding matrix I showed earlier is just that you choose eigenstates of the charge. Say you choose the eigenstate of the alpha 1 dagger alpha 2, which is the charge in this loop. And then you look at the matrix representation of this braiding. And that can tell you the braid matrix. So OK, so do I have another 5 minutes?
5 minutes? OK.
Okay. So there is also a topological field theory description, because we want to see, okay, so when I introduce this defect, I mean, if you gauge the symmetry, make the defect really local, that's like a Xiaogang Mason's theory. But if I don't gauge them, what is this topological field theory? So to construct such a theory, so we ask what we want. What we want is I want something which reduces to the ordinary transaminance theory when I don't have any defect. But then when I have defect, when I go around the defect, these two transaminants, this U1 by U1 transaminants, which describe the two layers, these two U1 should be exchanged. So there is a very natural way to do that, which is I start from a U2 transaminance theory, and I break it to the diagonal U1s by a Higgs field, by just some matrix, which is the joint representation of SU2. And it's neutral in the diagonal U, it's neutral in the U1 part of that U2. So if you choose a constant value of that Higgs field, like and point to the Z direction, then you break this to two U1s, right? And you can cook up a Lagrangian, which is the transaminance term of the U2, which reduce to that U1 by U1, U1 times U1 transforms. And then, but when you consider this non-uniform configuration, where this vector n has a half vertex, it means when the n goes around and becomes minus n, that is possible because we have overall phase that can give you another minus one that makes the h single value. That's why I have this single overall phase. So then you introduce half vertex, and then the half vertex will tell you that the first U1, which is the U1 aligned that vector direction, will become the second U1, which is the one go to the minus n direction. So that's the way you cook up this theory that gives you this point defect. And it also gives you the log interaction between them. So I guess I will skip this numerical part, which says that you can detect whether, so numerically, if you have a state, you can detect whether it's this topological numeric state we predicted by comparing the Gronsky degeneracy in even by odd and even by even lattice. And because even by odd case, you are necessarily changing the two layers. So it connects, so if you have a torus, then it connects the two torus of the two layers to one layer, then it gives you a different Gronsky degeneracy. So that's something that numerically you can check if you have an exact analyzation. And I would like to mention some relation to the more general twist defects. So basically, so you see that this idea, so first of all, this idea generalizes to more general genons, which means, so basically, if you don't have this bilayer abelian theory, but you have a more general theory with each layer maybe non-abelian, then you can still talk about the same story. As long as there's two layers, there is a symmetry between the two layers, then you can always introduce this twist defect, introduce this genome, which change the topology. And then in general, the discussion previously we did holds. So you can figure out the quantum dimension and the grading, because you know what happens is when you add a pair of defects, you add a handle. And then in a general theory, when you add a handle, on average, how much degree frame you add to the system is exactly the total quantum dimension of the single layer theory. So actually, the xenon has a quantum dimension, which is the total quantum dimension of the theory in each layer. But of course, here I'm only talking about the case where the two layers are completely decoupled, because in the non-abelian case, in general, I don't know how to couple the two layers and still preserve the symmetry. And then we can also figure out the grading in the same way, which corresponds to the modular transformation. And then one interesting comment is that when I take this G to be an icing TQFT, so if each layer is already some like Moore real estate, and we know that for a single Moore real estate, we cannot do a universal quantum computation, basically, because you can only realize some restricted realize some restricted class of unitary transformation. So that's not enough for quantum computation, because you want to realize any unitary rotation. And then people know that if you put the theory on a heterogeneous surface and you also allow measurement, then you can do a universal quantum computation. And the key thing that why heterogeneous surface is required here, the key reason is you want this dentist. Dentist give you this pi over 8 phase to one of the topological sectors that bring you away from this restricted set of unitary transformations. So only adding that is enough. And then there are previous proposals by Bravi Kitai, and there's this blueprint proposal to realize that really in the topological superconductors. But you need a heterogeneous surface. And now here, since we have this branch, this defect, then you can realize this without really requiring a heterogeneous surface. Basically, you can. Basically, our proposal is like a way to realize heterogeneous surface effectively in the lab system, where you just have a trivial disk, but you have dislocations, and I give you this possibility that you effectively give you the heterogeneous surface and the non-abelian, the universal quantum computation. So there are actually more general twist defects like the one I mentioned by Hector Bombing and by Xiaowang. So you can twist this some symmetry between like charge and flux in the Zn gauge series, and you can actually summarize all these things we know for different systems. Like in the fractional quantum Hall, there is a particle hole symmetry you can twist, which means you can define a defect by a charge go around becomes a quantum particle goes around becomes a quantum hole. And that's a symmetry because that doesn't change braiding, doesn't change any property of the system. And then in the Z engage theory, you can define similarly, you can define two kinds of Z2 symmetries, which is like particle hole symmetry and the exchange of the charge and the flux. So and then we have this xenon. So all these cases are actually similar. And interestingly, actually, for all these cases, we know we can actually embed, we can actually find a corresponding xenon problem to describe the same physics. We can always find some multi-layer system and talk about the symmetry between multi-layers and use that to describe these cases, these other cases, which originally are not a bilayer. But of course, you have some additional degree of freedom. But if you look at the non-trivial sector, which transforms in the symmetry, it's always like a xenon. I don't know if in general that's true. That shows that the xenons are kind of quite a general. And yeah, I will skip this this discussion, which just says that there are some other defects realized in the quantum Hall proximity with superconductor, and you can also map it to the xenon case. And that's just another way to realize quantum dimension square root m particles. So I would like to conclude by thanking my collaborators, Mason and Chaoming. And Mason is really driving force of all this work. Thank you.
Are there any questions?
Yeah.
So you created all this using lattice defects like this location. There are situations in which you introduce a pi flux that also does this when you look at eigenfunctions.
Pi flux of what?
Magnetic field. Like you change the hopping parameter.
But usually that doesn't give me an exchange of two layers or something like that. I mean, in topological superconductors, pi flux can give me a minus zero mode.
So I suspect that in this case, what you are doing through lattice dislocation probably can be mimicked through by introducing threading a pi flux through a black weight and another pi.
Well, at least not in the same physical system. I mean, if I insert a flux in this system, which is a quantum Hall system, I just get a abelian particle, which is some charge. Because it's a abelian quantum Hall. You insert a pi flux, you get, say for locking 1 over m, you get 1 over 2 m charge.
But if you look at the block functions, when you introduce a pi flux, and look at, for example, a non-bonding state, in which wave functions are 0 in one sublattice and non-zero, when you introduce a pi flux, they start mixing. So okay, we can discuss.
They start mixing between the different
sublattices. Yeah. If you look at a class of block functions, we can discuss it.
That's very interesting.
In fact, I wrote a paper about it long back with respect to some topology.
So if Hamiltonian has some hopping between A site and B site, the original Hamiltonian has hopping, so that can be viewed as some kind of pair creation of the genome?
No, I think it's just inter-externally between the two layers. So it doesn't. And it's not a xenon pair equation, it's the ordinary, it's the electron tunneling.
So what kind of, is there some operator that creates xenon dynamically?
Then I guess in this lattice system, then I have to really create pairs of dislocation, which means that your lattice has to be quantum. It's like maybe helium lattice. You have a quantum fluctuation of the lattice which creates pairs of xenon. So xenons are basically, so these locations are basically like vertices in the super fluid. So if you want a fluctuation like that, you need a phase fluctuation of the super fluid.
Actually, there is a way that, this quantum Hall state have a lot of quasi particles. And if you identify certain quasi particles which happen to have bosonic statistics, they really condensing those quasi particles along a line. And, then you can synthetically create this. Dislocation.
So
this
is
more general. That means this probably true for any topological states. That some topological, when the quasi particle have this automorphism, That also means that you have a special kind of quantum particle, combination of them, which happen to be bosonic.
Yeah.
And then you're assuming along a line, these bosonic quantum particles have a negative energy, they condense along a line. This line sometimes can behave like branch cut.
Yeah.
And so that's a.
So one example is
One the edge is almost like doing different condensation. Yeah.
Yeah, like here you have two indirect tunneling between the two compound edge states, and the normal tunneling doesn't change charge.
Yeah.
So nothing charge will allow you to create a pair of quasi particles. Which means quasi particle becomes quasi whole, and then that's a twisted line, like the condensation. But so is it in general, is it true that the symmetry in the topological field theory one to one correspond to bosons you can condense?
I think so. I believe all this can be realized by condensation of some quasi particle. And also, the condensation quasi particle is more general. You can condense any quasi particle, but some of them may not correspond to this GM. But condensing certain quasi particle, their behavior is exactly like what you described here.
Yeah, yeah.
And the only difference is that when you do that, the energy is linear in the distance. You know, here you can have a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And so the energy cost of this is less. But if you don't care too much about whether it's linear or log, then it's a linear, just make some linear line cut, some condensation of defect line can also simulate this.
Yeah, certainly. So certainly all the GNOM cases can be understood in that way because this edge picture I described, so you cut the edge and then you glue them back in a twist way. And the way you glue it back in twist way, you can say that means
it's
you use condensation.
Exactly.
Because when you take a particle like with charge Q in one layer, charge minus Q in the other layer, go across the defect, it becomes minus Q. So you can say, okay, there's some condensation.
Condensation will charge Q.
That's a
way, another way.
Yeah. In other words, you can say this twisted, this is kind of a geometrical way to realize superconductivity.
So actually, in the torus code model, this being very realistic in a sense, but more or less really, in a sense, if you add a strong magnetic field, the power is spin along a line. That's actually making this this dislocation. If you have a torus cone model, you do that.
But I thought if you add some magnetic field, generically, if I add some like local field, I would just completely deplete some region.
Kill
the region.
Yeah, that's also.
But this is some special kind of perturbation.
This line can be thick when you say making a hole. So that's a whole thing about this. It's whether line or hole. It's I don't know. Yeah, there's some maybe. Yeah, but there's some stuff over here.
So from field theory point of view, this xenon. So you change topology of field theory. So it's kind of adding. Each xenon kind of change all your characteristics by one.
Change what by one?
All your characteristics.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So it's kind of adding some quantized energy.
It's like a delta function in the curvature.
In the curvature.
Yeah.
So quantized.
Right, so delta function at some point. Yeah. So with a deficit angle, which is quantized. So basically, deficit angle at that point, it goes from 2 pi to 2 pi n. To by n, when you have a layer.
So any perturbation of that quantized band would into the solve as xenon?
I think so. It so looks like they are just the same. I mean, just a different description, but it's the same thing. I mean, like when people talk about calculation of the entanglement entropy, they use this conical, they use this point source of the energy momentum tensor and then use the conformal anomaly. So that's also a branch cut. So the same kind of thing.
Maybe one more question? Okay, so let's thank Xiaoyang again.